It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Why isn't Judge Kavanaugh asking for an FBI investigation if he has nothing to hide?
Pressure is building, with Republicans urging Professor Christine Blasey Ford to speak to the Judiciary Committee evaluating Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination on Monday.
I think it's not fair to Judge Kavanaugh for her not to come forward and testify. Both of them need to testify under oath next Monday before the Judiciary Committee.
Ford's attorney Deborah Katz emailed committee leaders writing, quote, she wishes to testify provided that we can agree on terms that are fair and which ensure her safety. A hearing on Monday is not possible, and the committee's insistence that it occur then is arbitrary in any event. Democrats say Professor Ford is not being treated fairly.
I consider that to be bullying. I consider that to be disregarding. I consider that to be something set up for failure. They would like a he said, she said scenario.
Capitol Police report at least 56 people were arrested today protesting outside Chairman Grassley's office and elsewhere. There are also signs of friction between Grassley and Judiciary's top Democrat, Dianne Feinstein, with Grassley writing he still wants to see Professor Ford's letter that Feinstein received approximately 7 weeks ago, noting that the contents of the letter were leaked only last week when it appeared the Senate was about to confirm Judge Kavanaugh. And Judiciary Republican staff tweeting today, on Monday, staff interviewed Judge Kavanaugh under penalty of felony. Democratic staff was invited and could have asked any question of Judge Kavanaugh. They declined to participate. Other Republicans say if a hearing doesn't happen, that is Professor Ford's choice.
Number one, she shouldn't be criticized for not doing it. Number two, we can't force her and we shouldn't try to. But then the Senate has to move forward based on the information we have before us.
While Professor Ford's attorney has raised concerns about her safety, Fox has reviewed vulgar and threatening email messages sent to Judge Kavanaugh and his wife in recent days. They are very graphic.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Never a dull moment here in Washington, D.C., and certainly never a dull moment when it comes to this particular news story. We are coming to you live from the Values Voter Summit 2018 at the Omni Shoreham Hotel here in Washington. And sitting across from me is the president of Family Research Council, Tony Perkins. Tony, I did not realize until I reread your bio that you are the longest-serving president of Family Research Council. I didn't know that.
Yes. Well, that's what happens when you stick around.
You know what? I remember, you probably remember that I remember when you started.
Yes.
I think we met on a plane and you had just come. I was the president of CWA and you were just starting. I think we kind of crossed by 6 months, maybe something like that. But I remember it so well. And it doesn't, in some ways, it seems like only yesterday, but in other ways, it seems like a million years ago.
It a lot has happened in those 15 years as it pertains to the nation, as it pertains to the faith community in America. In many ways, we're seeing a lot of good things. We've seen a lot of positive changes. I mean, you look at what's happened just in the last 2 years. I tell you what, I am thrilled with the advancement that we're making in not only restoring religious freedom in this country that the Obama years tore down, but really beyond that, we're seeing unprecedented movements by this administration, and quite frankly, it's encouraging. Now, that said, Sandy, as you track each and every day, the challenges have never been greater. The attacks on our faith have never been greater. I mean, there are those that I think want to take down this republic,
yes,
and they're working day in and day out to see that happen.
You know, the good thing, if there's a good thing about that, Tony, is I think many of us have known that for a long, long time, but I think maybe the leaders, I think even that a hearing with Judge Kavanaugh was a wake-up call for Republican senators. Our brothers across the aisle, they found out their brothers across the aisle really are trying to, they don't really care about them the same way. They don't have the same protocol or respect, and they have another kind of mission, which I think maybe they're waking up to.
I think what's happening, and I'm not putting this in the context of Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. I'm putting it in the context of good and evil.
Yes.
And there's a parable that Jesus tells in the scripture that I think is unfolding before our eyes. And it's the parable of the wheat and the tares. And there had been a preoccupation of the servants on the weeds, the tares that had been sown among the wheat. And he said, no, just leave it, let it go. And at the end, you'll be able to tell the distinction. There'll be such a clear distinction between the two. And I think what we're seeing in the nation today is a clear distinction between good and evil, and between right and wrong, between moral and immoral. And people gravitate to one side or the other. We are a divided nation. I mean, look, there's very little middle ground. Back 15 years ago, everyone was trying to get the middle ground.
Well, right.
There really is no middle ground today.
Yeah.
And that's, I believe, what made Donald Trump successful, is he's the first Republican that understood that every election is a base election. It is not to get the middle ground, but it is to solidify a vision that the people who, depending on what side you're on, will embrace and move toward. There is a clear line of distinction. It's what Reagan talked about, the bold colors.
Bold colors, yeah. That's really a very interesting thought. Because he is getting a lot of criticism for just, they keep saying, he's only talking about his base, he's only preaching to his base. But I never thought about the fact that that's what Reagan taught too. And that is what energizes the base. But Tony, let's talk about, I do want your comments on the Kavanaugh hearing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's much to be said about it, but many of us hear the story and something resonates. So I'd love to know what your thoughts are about what's going
on.
Well,
I was actually on Capitol Hill last night, and I had some conversations with the Senate leadership. And look, this is an unprecedented time. The obstruction, the opposition, unparalleled. But this, to the credit of the leadership in the Senate, and I know we can dissect a lot of issues that we disagree with. But this administration, working with this Senate leadership, has set records in terms of the confirmation of judges. When you look at the circuit court judges, lower court judges, and systematically moving these judges through. And they are committed to seeing justice done, and that means a vote on Judge Kavanaugh. Now, they're not dismissing in any way these allegations. These are all serious. We want people to, feel validated in that sense and have their day in court, if you will, or in the Senate. But they're not going to allow this to derail it. And look at how this unfolded. For 6 weeks, Dianne Feinstein had this. She sat on it. She didn't share it with anyone in terms of the committee, in terms of the Republicans in the committee. Did not bring it up in closed-door sessions with Judge Kavanaugh. Did not bring it up in the closed-door meeting or hearing with him and the Senate Judiciary Committee. Didn't bring it up in the open hearing. The eve of the vote, she drops it. It looks suspect.
It looks very suspect. And now she won't even let the Republican leadership look at the letter, even look at it.
And I will tell you, I was actually speaking to, had a conversation with Mitch McConnell last night, and I commended Chuck Grassley to him. I think Chuck Grassley has handled this quite well we're in the hashtag Me Too era, where no matter what you do, you're wrong. And so I think he's navigated this course quite well and been respectful to these allegations, true or false, but also staying focused on the mission of the Senate.
Tony, one last question about that. Do you think that Republican leadership has had a wake-up call, again, through the radicalism of the hearings? It's getting very close to them. What we're seeing in the streets, they haven't been experiencing.
That's yet to be seen. I mean, they clearly get that this is unparalleled. When you see the chaos that the Democrats tried to inject into the hearing, and the nation saw it. But again, here's what's happening, Sandy. They were playing to their base. Look what's happening. You've got the Bernie Sanders candidates that are winning primaries, and they're afraid. Their base has become radicalized. You see the left becoming more liberal. You see the right becoming more conservative. I like that. Some people don't. Again, there's very little in the middle.
Yeah. No, and I think the lines are getting very bright. You're right about that. All right, so here we are at the Values Voter Summit, and every time you and I talk, there's something. It's never dull. It's never a dull time in the nation's history, and people are just kind of yawning their way through this. So the Kavanaugh hearings are front and center. The 2018 midterms are coming up. So as you guys are planning this particular event, it's a wonderful event, and hopefully we'll get into the particulars of that. If you could accomplish what you want to accomplish with this event this year in 2018, what would it be?
Well, as you said, there's always an issue, and we don't, you know, how can we plan for that? We can't. Did we have any idea Kavanaugh would be in the situation it is? No. Did we have any idea that the nation would still be focused on Pastor Andrew Brunson? No, we didn't know that. Those will be key issues. And the midterm election. The theme of this year's Values Voter Summit is for the sake of America. And, you know, people say, oh, that's that nationalistic view. Well, you know what? I don't apologize for that. Because if you look at America more than any other nation, America exports more food. We feed the world. When the world is in trouble, who do they call? Our military defends most of the world when called upon. Who is it that sends the most missionaries around the globe? It's still the United States of America. Who is the most charitable nation in the world? It's the United States of America. So, yes, I make no apologies. A strong America, a healthy America, is good for the world. And so for the sake of America, Christians need to be praying, Christians need to be voting, and Christians need to be standing for biblical values all across this nation at every level, every place that they are.
You know, Tony, the other thing that I don't think, I didn't realize this till I was president of the CWA, and I was in Ottawa, Canada, speaking at an event near the parliament. And I had Canadians tell me how much they look to Canadian conservatives, look to America for inspiration. You've got to fight. You're our only hope. Now we're hearing this in Europe. They look to us. Yeah. We are giving leadership in other ways. We are like the last, really we are. We are the last flag standing on moral values and on Christian principles. That's it. We are the last man standing. And so so I'm with you. I'm not ashamed to try to fight for this good thing in the right way. Right. In a way that honors God. All right, so what is at stake from your perspective, Tony, with the 2018 midterms? It's, you know, there are a lot of things to say, but if you were to motivate people, Christian voters, to get out and do something, what would you say? What's the motivation?
You know, we've become a little bit calloused to the phrase, this is the most important election of our lifetime. You know, because how many times have we heard that? We hear that. In fact, I think I've heard that with every election in the last 15 years that I've been here. In fact, I've said it many times. But here's the reality. Every election increasingly becomes the most important election in the country. Because here's what happened. I think in 2016, I do believe that the balance of the republic was at question. I mean, whether or not the republic went, I think we would have lost the republic as we know it had Hillary Clinton been elected. In this election, I believe the progress that's being made in terms of restoring fundamental freedoms, rebuilding our nation's military. I mean, who can question the economy? Now, I think the economy has a lot to do, and this is going to be controversial. And I know most people know that I steer away from controversial things.
I don't, so you're okay. You can talk to me. Talk to me, Tony.
Look, I think the president's made good choices on regulations. He's put America first. But here's where I think the economy is. I mean, it's booming. Look. Lowest unemployment in 49 years. Another record in the stock market. Those who bless Israel will be blessed. I think there's a correlation. Now, again, some would laugh at that, mock at it, scoff at it, but I stand on biblical promises, and America and this administration has taken steps that no other administration was willing to do, and I believe God has blessed that. All of that is at stake in this midterm election.
Yes, for sure. And Tony, when I think of resources and finances, it isn't to enrich ourselves. We think of God himself promises a future and a hope for our generations, our posterity, a future and a hope. Yes. So prosperity provides a future and a hope for our children. What parent wouldn't want that for their children and grandchildren? So there's nothing selfish about that, and it is the way God works. He does prosper his people. So there are a lot of things to fight for. Tony Perkins, thank you for your leadership of Family Research Council, and we look forward to this great event in the next few days. Thank you so much for providing that.
Well, thank you, Sandy. Great to be with you, and I'm so glad that you're here on Radio Row at the Values Voter Summit.
Good news. You are not stuck with your health care plan. Really. You have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their healthcare bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their healthcare needs, but the needs of others, too. And it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit **345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's **345.
Steve Russo with Real Answers.
Suppose I told you that I had found the cure for all cancers. What would you say if I told you it is extremely simple and that someone has already paid for all cancer patients to receive it? Awesome, you'd say. Your head would start spinning just thinking about the friend or family member that I could save and the millions of lives that could be affected. No matter what, you'd want to know what a person has to do to get the cure. Chances are you didn't even bother to imagine any of these scenarios because you realize that I haven't really found the cure for cancer. But I can tell you the cure for a disease that's even more deadly than cancer. It's called sin. We've all been born with this disease and we will all die from it. The great news is there really is a cure. All you have to do is put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ.
Mistakes may be just a decision away. You need real answers. Steve Russo has resources that can help. Check out his website at realanswers.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The ever-changing far-left narrative surrounding Judge Brett Kavanaugh has changed once again. This time, Democrats are trying to convince you that Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, his accuser, cannot get a fair hearing because there are too many old white men on the Senate Judiciary Committee. California Congressman John Garamendi.
Women for decades have faced this situation. They've always, when they come forward with an accusation of assault or rape, they become the victim in the hearing. And we've got to put a stop to that. Women across this nation should be outraged at what these white men senators are doing to this woman.
Well, the great irony is those old white men on the Senate Judiciary have been going above and beyond to try and accommodate Dr. Ford so she can tell her story. And the people who shielded Dr. Ford's story for as much as 2 months were white female Democrats. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I prosecuted 38-year-old cases, so they're pretty good about locating witnesses and finding people. That's their job. They're a whole lot better at it than the Senate majority or minority staff. That's what the FBI does. That's what they're trained to do.
And even if they were to ram this guy through, as soon as Democrats get gavels, we're going to want to get to the bottom of this.
If the Democrats win back the House and or the Senate, Democrats will investigate what happened.
I am confident of that, and I think we'll also be investigating why the FBI stood down its background investigation when this came up.
Judge Kavanaugh has not asked to have the FBI review these claims. Is that the reaction of an innocent person? It is not.
Sandy Rios back with you. We are live at the Values Voter Summit, and it just goes on and on. Michelle Bachmann, who is one of my favorites, and I think she's probably one of yours too, is sitting in front of me. Let me just say that Michelle is a former congresswoman from Minnesota. She was in the Congress, I think, about 8 years. Is that right, Michelle? And she was also a former presidential candidate. She, what you might not remember about Michelle is she's a tax attorney, does all these complex issues. And the other thing about Michelle I always love is that she's deeply rooted in her understanding of philosophy, and Christian doctrine and thinking. She is an incredible person who used her time here in Washington to the max, and she's greatly missed. And so, Michelle, first of all, welcome home.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be back in D.C., especially with you, Sandy Rios. We spent a lot of great hours together on air, and I always appreciate what a champion you were for our values.
Trying to save the world. How are we doing?
I think you're doing great.
No, that's not true.
We're still having fun.
Michelle, just in a word. People will want to know how you're doing. Marcus, your kids, and
I'm doing fantastic.
You're doing
I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm very thankful. The Lord called me into politics. I had no intention of being in politics. We had a lot of foster children, and that's what actually got me started in politics. Our biological children were homeschooled and in private Christian school, but the law in Minnesota only allowed one option for our foster kids, which was public school. I saw the nonsense that came home in their backpacks, and that's what got me involved in politics, actually, to try and reform America's education. But I am doing absolutely great.
Well, that's great. That's really great to hear. And when I think about now, when I'm looking at this Kavanaugh situation and I'm hearing the nonsense from Kristen Gillibrand and Macy Hirona, you know, about men just should shut up. And I thought about interviewing you this morning. And honestly, Michelle, in a different way, we could say that I think you were marginalized in many ways. You could say it was because you were a woman. I don't know. A lot of men marginalized you. There's no question about it. So if anybody could pout or complain about that, it would be you. And yet we have I would just love to know what you think about these comments from these women. How this accuser has a right to speak. She should be believed. These white old men are mistreating her. They should just shut up. You heard the dialogue. You've heard the words. I'd just like to know what your thoughts are about what's happening here.
Well, I think in the hearings and in some of the clips that you've just been playing, these are a lot of people who see themselves as potentially 2020 presidential candidates on the Democrat ticket, and you're seeing auditions. And frankly, they are flopping their auditions in an embarrassing way. I mean, nobody is scoring a takedown punch because you are dealing with probably the most platinum class act in Brett Kavanaugh that you could possibly have. He will be confirmed. He'll be confirmed next week. We've been unfortunately, sadly, on the stage watching a lot of fraudulent kabuki theater the last few weeks, and we are rightly outraged by this borking of Brett Kavanaugh, meaning just unjustified takedown. But again, he will be confirmed next week. I have absolutely no doubt of that because, again, this woman who had all these stories that she wanted to tell, now that she's given the opportunity, isn't so eager to tell, and her lawyer wants to tie up the situation so that they can put a fake dog and pony show story on next week and not have her questioned. And that's what has to happen. So I think that Brett Kavanaugh has nothing to hide. He's going to be at that hearing. He's going to give his side of the story and respond, I'm sure, to anything that this woman says. And if she shows, great. If she doesn't, well, too bad. And then the vote, it takes place. And that's exactly what should happen.
Michelle, we have known each other that long, certainly not when we were girls growing up. But you and I both had the same experience that girls get really mean and goofy. They are jealous. They tell stories about each other.
They're worse than the boys, I can tell you that.
We do know that. So we can say this, we're women. This is what this reminds me of. This reminds me of the kinds of games and stupidity that girls engage in high school and junior high. It's and to see it now mainstreamed and made like the standard is just amazing.
It brings us down, quite honestly. It brings the conversation down because the thing that is really disquieting here in D.C., it's been this way when I was here. Rarely do you talk about an issue. Almost always you talk about the nonsense. And that's what I would tell people, that about 65 to 85% of my time in D.C. was spent on nonsense, things like this.
Exactly.
But this is actually what the opposition party does. They love to throw a dirt ball and have everyone get hot and bothered about the dirt ball. Meanwhile, huge things are being run right through the main entry ramp, which is things like we are losing speech. It's unbelievable. That's the big story in this country. We are losing freedom of speech. And look no further than Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. the massive censorship of speech, particularly speech of Christians and speech of conservatives, is happening in front of our eyes. There's two big stories for this election. One is the Democrat Party's embrace of Democrat socialist ideals. In other words, the mainstreaming of communism ideas, socialistic ideas, in the Democrat Party. That's the one story. The other story of this election is the censorship that we're seeing, because we have a massive amount of propaganda coming through the mainstream media that just isn't true, one story after another. But the other fact is a story that the Gateway Pundit, which is a website that I read, they had done a study and said that traffic to conservative sites has been decreased by 93%. And that's because of the tech titans, the giants of Google, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. These are no longer, in my mind, American companies. These are globalist countries that are companies that are beyond almost the purview of government. I mean, they flipped their nose off at government. You notice Google didn't even show up when they were requested to show up at a hearing by Congress, because they see themselves as bigger than the government that they enjoy living under. They are so rich. They have so much power. And so now they are busy involved in censoring our speech. Just take a look at your smartphone. Pull it out right now, and you are getting limited by the day. There was a story on Drudge last night that I think I encourage everyone to read, where the suggestion is coming forward from Google that within 10 years from now, there will be two internets. One will be controlled by China, filled with censorship by their own admission, because all of these big tech titans, they're all babies, they're chicken littles, and they are kowtowing literally to China, and they are censoring. Well, guess what? We're getting a preview of what they're going to censor. They're going to censor our religious views and our religious beliefs, and they're going to censor conservatism. And so this will move in only one direction, Sandy: authoritarianism, dictatorships. So wouldn't Mao and Stalin have loved to have this capability where you could completely censor and utilize artificial intelligence like facial recognition, so you can literally control the movements of the people in your country and know where they are? Google is helping them put together what's called a social profile. So if any Chinese isn't agreeing with the main line of what the Chinese government wants them to agree with, then they can control and marginalize them. Don't think that there will be two internets. There won't be. There will be one internet, and that internet will be a control of people, not just Chinese people, but control of people across the world. This is something where I really believe Congress is about 20 days late and $100 short on this. They need to get involved in this issue, and I think we are at the point of needing sanctions, certainly regulation like a public utility. I don't know if Congress is capable of doing this, but I think you need to get some really smart guys involved in figuring out what can we do for the maintenance of religious liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, and also freedom of movement and control. I know this sounds like almost like a Orwellian thing.
Well, it's exactly what it is.
I think it is an Orwellian thing.
You know, the frightening thing to me, in addition to all of that frightening stuff, is that you and I, we're not that far from remembering what oppression was like in Russia. I'm sure you've had so many world travels and experiences, Michelle. I have too. I was in Russia before Boris Yeltsin was elected president. And I remember people being stunned, even on the street, interviews I did, at the information they were getting for the first time. For 60 years, they had been shut off. And I remember them saying, we're beginning to think. We're hearing all these things. We're hearing about God. That was one of the things they said. They thought there was no God. Just the stunning reality that their minds and their thoughts, their information, had been controlled for so long.
Yeah.
And so we know that. We know that. But our kids don't know that somehow.
It's amazing how compliant our children are to the media takeover of their own speech. And what we're seeing is, culture has probably the biggest impact on people over anything. And the tide that, of culture that young people are in right now, they are being swept up in it. And for their sake, we need to ensure that there is freedom. Freedom in all of our abilities to be able to communicate so that they can have the possibility of being able to make their own choices on faith and on speech. And that's really what we're losing, because Family Research Council, the Values Voter Summer that we're at, the three hallmarks are faith, family, freedom. You don't have faith without freedom. You don't have freedom of movement in your family. You see that in China with their one-child policy. Now they've upped it to two children. And their next thing China's thinking of doing, because they're in a birth dearth, people aren't having children now in China by choice, not by government dictate. They just don't want to. So China's growing old before it grows rich. So now China's thinking of taxing people to have children. So look at the coercion over the decades. That's China. Well, it doesn't take that much to translate that to other countries. We're a rare bird in this world. The United States is a rare bird of freedom. And that freedom is at serious peril if we're taking away the ability of people to have free, true choice over their faith, over their family, and over their freedoms.
You know, I think one of the tricky things, Michelle, all of this is true, and you and I operate Christians who are in this is our lives. We pledged our hearts and our energies into the public arena to try to balance. And yet we understand that Christians, I was just reading again in the Colossians, that we have been saved from darkness. We have been spared. We know that. Our future is secure in the Lord Jesus.
That's right.
And so a lot of Christians take that to mean then it's all right. It's well with me. And I can't do anything about that anyway. So Michelle, isn't that true? We can't really fix this anyway. And
you know,
our future's secure. So
I would point to a very dear friend of mine who died in her 90s recently, and she prayed fervently every day because she saw herself as an active participant in this world. While there was breath in her lungs, she prayed. And over again, her favorite psalm was Psalm 91, and she prayed it over her family, over her children. She prayed for me on a regular basis. And we know that the fervent, effectual prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And I have just completed a 40-day prayer and fasting. I was praying for these upcoming midterm elections. I'm about to go into another one. One thing that I want to encourage all of your listeners at the Bot Radio Network is to embrace this idea of prayer and fasting between now and the election. This is an absolutely crucial time. We were living in the golden years of the United States right now, and this could potentially come to a screeching halt, and all of the gains that have been made could not only come to a halt, once they come to a halt, it'll be very difficult to bring them back. I'm not looking at this gloom and doom. I'm looking at this absolutely positive, because we have something no one else has: the ability to communicate with the one who made us, with the creator of the universe. Why wouldn't we avail ourselves of that opportunity? So I am encouraging everyone and challenging everyone in this audience. Don't gripe 1 second about these upcoming elections or issues that we're facing today if you're not literally, intentionally on your knees every day. Open up the scripture, pray, seek the God of the universe. That is the fastest, most efficient way for us to operate in this world. That is our direct line to seeing movement in our world. And I've been doing it. I'm going to keep doing it. But again, there's a critical mass. And Jesus said in John 17, Father, I wish they were one, even as you and I were one. So let's agree that we will be one in his spirit, one in his word, one in prayer for the next 2 months.
That's beautifully said, Michelle. And I, you know, the fasting part, I hadn't even thought about. I certainly admonish people all the time to work and, you know, pray and certainly stay in scripture, because we can't do this without God's mind, without taking on the mind of Christ.
But this is a big deal where we are right now. This is a spiritual war.
Yeah.
This is a spiritual war. These election battles, you see it every day on TV, what a spiritual battle this is. And so the fasting part doesn't mean necessarily people might be diabetic. They might say, I can't fast. I'm not telling you what kind of fast to do. I didn't fast all food, all water. What I do is I take certain foods that I don't eat, or maybe certain meals of the day. So whatever you feel comfortable before the Lord, that's what you do.
Just making a sacrifice
your
own way.
And it focuses your mind. It focuses your prayers.
That's a great challenge. Michelle Bachman, see, this is why I wanted to talk to you today. You're a great blessing, and you continue to be,
you
Michelle.
You are, too. I miss you, and it's good to see you again.
Likewise. All right, Sandy Rios. Coming up next, General Jerry Boykin, another great warrior of the faith. And so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning. American Family Radio, by the way, on AFR Talk.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Acts 17:26 conveys to us the reality that we were born and placed in the 21st century by God's specific design. He determined before time where we would live and when we would live there. If you're in Minnesota, Mississippi, or Maine, God put you there on purpose. He's not surprised by the darkness we see around us, nor is he caught off guard by it. In fact, he specifically prepared for it by making sure you're alive right now. God can do whatever he wants, but he's chosen to use you and me as ambassadors of his kingdom. We are his torches to light up the darkness.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. If a single issue delineates the chasm between the worldview of our two major political parties, socialism may be it. Socialism is a rabidly non-conservative view of public policy. It depends on an ever bigger and more powerful government, which involuntarily transfers wealth from those who have to those who don't. Capitalism prefers a smaller government, which transfers responsibility from government to the individual citizen. It depends upon self-reliance rather than welfare dependency. Capitalists believe in the transfer of wealth just like socialists do, only they believe in individuals giving generously and willingly out of their own resources. It's no surprise that 57% of Democrats view socialism positively, while just 16% of Republicans do. Never forget, the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen.
Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
My name is Esther, and I'm from Ohio. I started listening to American Family Radio about 4.5 years ago, shortly after the death of my husband. I had been on my way to the nursing home to visit my mom and was praying about how God would want me to be a good financial steward of what we had.
American Family Radio is touching lives.
I turned on the radio and was kind of flipping through channels, and Dan Celia was on, and I was really captivated by what I heard there. I have been a faithful listener ever since that day.
Would you help support this life-changing effort? Join us for our 3-day Share-a-thon starting Tuesday, October 16th on listener-supported American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In the election of 2016, American voters responded to and repudiated the left and the fundamental transformation of this country it pursued during the Obama presidency. My guess is that a similar sentiment may prove decisive this November. Consider, for example, the leftists' undermining of the rule of law. Look no further than Hillary Clinton's serial and as yet unpunished criminal conduct that would land anybody else in jail. Then there's the appalling double standard for Democrats who abuse women. For instance, the left is evidently untroubled by recent documented evidence that the Democratic Party's vice chairman, Representative Keith Ellison, repeatedly and physically abused his girlfriend. But it is destroying the reputation and future prospects of Judge Brett Kavanaugh over decades-old and unsubstantiated allegations of sexual misconduct. Americans are fundamentally fair. What's happening at the moment is not, and must be rejected this fall. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I think they should continue to push. If Mr. Trump and the White House does not relent, well, then I think they have some decisions to make, whether or not they're going to just not follow that direction and be fired or to resign. They have an obligation, since they took an oath of office to the Constitution of the United States, not to Mr. Trump, to uphold their responsibilities.
Well, that was former CIA Director John Brennan under President Obama, and he is responding to the notion that these right now classified documents that have to do with the dossier and the FISA report are going to be made public by the president. And, of course, he's fighting back. We're finding out, to Sarah Carter's reporting just last night, that the FBI actually, in exchanges between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and others, were finding out the FBI did not believe the CIA and the intelligence agencies had enough evidence to show that Russia actually colluded in the election to help Donald Trump. And that's actually in writing. So that's coming out. But John Brennan is a little upset about them releasing this information. He's kind of warning other intelligence officers that their obligations to the Constitution, not to the president. So I'd like to introduce my good friend, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who is the Vice President of Family Research Council. He's the Executive Vice President. And you will remember, and I want to restate, that General Boykin was one of the founders of Delta Force in the U.S. Army. He commanded the Army's Green Berets as well as the Special Warfare Center and School, 36 years in the Army, and the last 4 years as Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. When it comes to these intelligence matters, he is the go-to person. And so, General Boykin, thanks for joining me this morning.
Sandy, I'm delighted to be with you this morning.
You must have known John Brennan.
I did.
Yeah. So what can you say about what you think's happening with him? Why is he complaining so much about these documents being released?
Well, first of all, without violating your censorship policy, there's some things I'd like to say, but I can't. So, look, Brennan is, we all know that that Brennan was a member of the Communist Party. Brennan has, for a long time, been sympathetic to not only Marxism, socialism, communism, but Islam. And if you go back and listen to his speeches about Jerusalem, he calls it Al-Quds, which gives you a very clear indication that he is on the other side on the issue of the American embassy being in Jerusalem and so forth. Brennan is a guy that is evidence of the deep state. And if you don't think that the intelligence community was weaponized by the Obama administration and you don't think the deep state exists, all you have to do is look at John Brennan.
So he's probably a little worried about what's going to be in those documents that are going to be released. I mean, why else would he
Absolutely.
Be? He seems to be off his game a little bit. I just pretty much spelled out your 36 career with the Army, General. And so I'm really curious to change the subject a little bit about what effects you've seen the Trump presidency have on U.S. armed forces. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of funding. Mm-hmm. I know that the rules of engagement have changed, but I'd just be curious, as a military man, what changes have you seen?
Well, I think the morale picked up within 48 hours after the Donald Trump taking the oath of office. I think that people realize that this was a guy that really cares about our military. He doesn't see them as a experimental lab and see them as lab rats, as the Obama administration did. And then when he changed the rules of engagement and he said, we're out there to win. You know, Donald Trump's about winning. You know, remember he said, you're going to get tired of winning. Well, that means wars as well. So when he said rules of engagement are changing, you go after them now. You kill them, you capture them, but go after ISIS. And what, in a year we had recovered 92% of the territory that ISIS controlled. That does a lot to boost the morale of our military and to let them know that they have a commander-in-chief who really cares.
One of the things that you and I've worked, at least I've been kind of a partner, you're the one working on it, but I've been kind of a sidekick, has been on the religious freedom aspect of the U.S. military, General. We've had meetings at the Pentagon and done what we could to try to protect chaplains and other people who were expressing their deeply held religious beliefs. Where are we with that? Any changes? Is it any different, just as bad?
No, Donald Trump signed an executive order, and he signed this his first year in office. And that executive order, which people are not even aware of in many cases, actually applied to all of the executive branch, and it was an executive order that protected religious liberty in the military. And then Jeff Sessions issued implementing instructions. So he has taken the first step. This is not an end-all, but he's taken the first step to protect religious liberty in the military as well as the rest of the government. Now, there are still people out there that are holdovers from 8 years under Obama that their instinct is to violate the First Amendment rights of their soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines when some of these atheist groups or Muslim groups that come out against us all the time, when they say something, they instinctively want to do what they ask them to do or demand that they do. But now that's changing, and I think that we're seeing that. We just had a couple of cases here just in the last 2 weeks where the commanders of installations, which have been threatened by some of these atheist groups, and you know the ones that I'm talking about, have just basically blown it off and said, thank you for your interest in national security. I'll get back to you if I need your advice. And that is what's happening. But, Sandy, you have been part of this thing with Chaplain Squires at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. That is a great victory for every chaplain and every man and woman in all of our military. And that is a great victory because that's what we've been looking for, is that kind of victory.
Tell people what that was.
Chaplain Squires would not allow a same-sex couple to come to a marriage retreat that he was sponsoring, so he did exactly what the regulations say. He got another chaplain to do it, but that wasn't good enough. That's why...
It's never good enough.
It's never good enough. So they complained, and they did an investigation of him. The investigator, overwhelming into evidence, the investigator lied. And for 7 months, Chaplain Squires was in limbo as to whether he was going to be prosecuted by court-martial for dereliction of duty. And his chaplain's assistant missed her opportunity to go to college and then go on to be an officer in the U.S. military because she was also flagged or all positive personnel actions were stopped against her, and 7 months they sat on this thing, which was based on what we absolutely know was a lie by the investigator, and the commanding general at Fort Bragg would not do the right thing and just go ahead and release them and exonerate them because they did exactly what they were supposed to do. And then we sent them a very direct letter, called them out, and the general there immediately recanted and said, okay, call off your dogs, you know.
You know, we're seeing everywhere, and oh, thank God for that, first of all. We're seeing, whether it's the intelligence services or the people in the White House, in the Congress, and certainly in the Pentagon, there are people embedded. There are holdovers. We talk about this all the time. Some really bad things are still taking place. From your perspective, if conservatives were to prevail in 2018, and then if President Trump were to be reelected in 2020, do you think that this stuff could really be rooted out with the right leadership, if the right personnel were in place?
There are certain things that you're not going to reverse. You're not going to reverse don't ask, don't tell in the Army or in the military services, for example. And that's why we say elections have consequences. But already, look at what Trump has reversed. The climate change treaty, the Paris Treaty, the Iran Treaty. Look at the things that he has already started down the road to complete and total annihilation. Like for every regulation that his administration passes, they repeal 22. You've sat through that briefing. 22. And most of them are OSHA or most of them are EPA regulations, which are stopping businesses, stopping farmers. And so, yes, he can reverse a heck of a lot of it. But there are residual effects that are going to be there forever. And I don't think they're, you know, and I named one of them, but the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military.
To go into the intelligence agencies or the broader, like John Bolton, of course, I think we both were very happy that he was appointed to be the National Security Advisor. But we also know it's a mixed bag at the White House. We complain about that a lot, and we just kind of wonder why in the world. We kind of know that, too. But for whatever reason, the president is surrounded by people that are really not his friends, certainly not the friends to his policies. But so from your perspective and your analysis, what difference has John Bolton made in that White House?
John Bolton has, first of all, if you look at his predecessor, H.R. McMaster got all three of his stars under Barack Obama. So when you listen to McMaster talking about Islam, it was like listening to Barack Obama. It was all the talking points from the Obama administration. John Bolton has come in now and taken a totally different approach. First of all, we just closed the PLO offices here. He didn't try to walk the margins on this. He went to the president and made it very clear where he stands on the PLO and what they stand for and what they've done with regards to America and Israel is both. So I think John Bolton is a breath of fresh air. I think he is a most experienced diplomat we have, and you can call him a hawk, and I think he is from a national security perspective, but that's what we need at this time.
I suspect that John was the key person on this North Korea thing, too. You know, that's been a bug in that's been a bee in his hat for many years since I've known him, is what the U.S. allowing North Korea to get away with nonsense and can repeatedly paying them, actually, for their misdeeds, like bribing them to be good. And I see John's hand on the handling of North Korea and Iran.
I totally agree with you. And I just as a side note, it is absolutely amazing now to watch John Kerry. His legacy is being disassembled one piece at a time, and it's crumbling fast. And consequently, Barack Obama's legacy is being disassembled. And they are just going nuts because Trump in this two-year period has done so much to reverse the effects of the Obama administration. But again, they're at the end of his first term. There will be some residual things that are still there.
All right, so here we are leaping toward the 2018 midterm elections, General. And, you know, I think Christian voters are wavering between two things. A lot of them are just furious. My listeners are pretty energized and upset. But they also have their enthusiasm muted because they can't see many champions. Just how would you counsel people to feel and to act in response to all the things that we're seeing and the fact that we are kind of living in a vacuum when it comes to champions?
Look at where the Democratic Party is going. Look, more and more, every day you have a new socialist, and I'll say Marxist, that pops up with a lot of popular support in the Democratic Party. That's where the party is going. There are no moderates in the party anymore. They're all leftist, but they're going more extreme to the left. And you got to ask yourself, is that what you want? Is that really what you want in governing this country? Look, the Republicans have not done their job. I admit that, and I think we all do. And we're disappointed with many of them. But look, Donald Trump needs a Republican House and Senate to see all the way to the finish his agenda, and I think his agenda has already proven to be good for America because we are safer now, but our economy is great, our jobs are up, and so I think that people really have to consider, do you really want to stop what the momentum we have today? And the way to do that is don't go vote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd say what's the use, or they're all alike, so I can't vote. You know, just to prove your point in the last few minutes here, you probably are aware that Keith Ellison, who is the co-chair of the Democratic National Committee, a new documentary is out about him by Trevor Loudon, and he traces Keith Ellison's affiliation with the Communist Party, and of course with the radical. We knew this, that he's part of the Muslim Brotherhood operation, which is familiar to us, but not so much to other people. He is a really bad dude with a radical history. Yep. So that just to demonstrate your point, he's running for Attorney General in Minnesota. Who would have ever thought? We're out of time, General. Last word from you, 30 seconds.
Well, I want to go back to what we said. Go to the polls and vote. Get your neighbors to go to the polls and vote. We cannot sit this election out. It is maybe, the most critical midterm we've had in my lifetime. And so go to the polls and make a difference.
General Jerry Boykin, and again, we're coming to you live from the Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for listening this morning, and we'll be telling you all about what happens the rest of this weekend when I come back to you on Monday morning. Have a great weekend, and don't forget to, on your knees, worship before the Lord. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.